The meeting has been fantastic. It occurred to me, and I guess it's not a novel thought, but we become so specialised as researchers and we work in our silos, and when we go to conferences we join people who are working in the same silos, and so we're very sort of isolated and very specialised. And coming here has made me realise that Paul Davies made the comment that we're really trying to join the dots to try and understand how we can do effective research into cancer. And I think bringing together people with such different interests is we're finding commonalities, and we're being able to join those dots.
And what was your talk about?
So my talk was about mammalian embryogenesis, how mammalian embryo develops and how it responds normally to the low levels of oxygen in its developmental environment. We're interested in how oxygen acts as a morphogen for normal embryonic development, and how when that oxygen level changes during gestation, how the cells in the embryo respond from proliferation to differentiation, and how that has a structural effect on the organs that are forming.
So you mean to say that the structure of the embryo is determined by the oxygen that they're subjected to?
Yes, not oxygen alone, but rather that changing oxygen levels can then, there are oxygen gradients in the developing embryo, and that gradient will turn on some genes for expression and produce proteins that will affect the way a group of cells will behave, and another group of cells that are receiving a different oxygen level will have a different molecular response. And so you will have a group of cells proliferating in one area and others differentiating into a specialized tissue type, basically laid out or dictated to by the oxygen gradient to which they're exposed.
And if something is different about that, do you get abnormalities?
You do indeed. So it's been long known, at least since the 1820s, that if an embryo develops in a low oxygen environment, that you will get developmental defects. So, you know, the heart won't form properly, or the neural tube, the brain. And this was actually work done by a French scientist where he put shellac around a chicken egg, stopping the oxygen getting in, and the embryo developed abnormally and had limb defects and heart defects and so on. We've been doing research in my laboratory showing that low oxygen or hypoxia, just a short exposure to it during embryonic development in the mouse, for example, can impact on the formation of somites, which are precursor tissues to the vertebral column, or indeed can have detrimental effects on heart development. And recently we've been able to show that if mice have a genetic predisposition for a birth defect, and they get a secondary insult, a hypoxic shock, that indeed they form heart and vertebral defects. So it's a gene-environment interaction between the predisposition and the low oxygen.
And what's the connection to cancer?
The connection to cancer is an interesting one. So tumours grow and they don't have an oxygen supply, and as they get larger, they become low or hypoxic in oxygen in their centre. And so what they do is they stabilise a protein called hypoxia-inducible factor alpha, and that protein is a transcription factor, and it turns on the expression of a growth factor called vascular endothelial growth factor, VEGF. And basically VEGF acts as a signal to surrounding blood vessels and calls them in, such that they will supply the tumour with a blood supply so it can get larger, and ultimately tumour or cancerous cells will go through the blood system and metastasize elsewhere in the body. So there are a lot of commonalities between tumour growth and hypoxia and the organisation of blood vessels around it in the form of angiogenesis between tumours and between developing embryos.
So do you think that the two communities have got a lot to learn from each other?
Yes, I think we do, because we do think in slightly different ways, and it's very interesting for me to have been here today to listen to the talks of the cancer biologists and understand the way they're thinking about hypoxia and the effects that hypoxia has on cell survival and cell death. And so I'm learning from them to think as a bit of a cancer biologist when I'm thinking about the role of hypoxia normally in embryonic development and under levels of less oxygen or hypoxia during embryonic development. And I guess it goes the other way as well. I would suspect, and I've had some comments from the cancer biologists, that some of the work I presented today has given them some thought about how they too think about tumorous cells and how they respond to oxygen in a cancer scenario.
Do you think this might lead to a collaboration between you and a cancer biologist?
Yes, I do. And in fact, I think there are a couple of areas here. I'm keen to think more about the role of hypoxia and how it affects the metabolism of the cell and its survival with respect to embryonic development. So I'm certainly going to start using some of the cancer biologists' tools and their knowledge, and I'm looking forward to exploring collaboration with them.
Have you heard anything today that has surprised you?
I've been very much surprised by the research presented today about the role of high oxygen and the healing effects that high oxygen can have, and how putting cancer patients in hyperbaric chambers can actually, in combination with caloric restriction, kill tumour cells. I think that sounds absolutely fundamentally fantastic, and it would be very nice to see that work in the clinic.
What have you learned from this conference?
I think what's very interesting is when you step out of your sort of focused area of research, you realise how little you actually do know, because those who are listening to you are not experts in your area, and so they ask you the most fundamental questions, and you often say, oh yes, well that's known. But in fact, when you think about it, you don't know why it's known, and you go back, as I did the other night, and when I got back to my room and I was looking on the internet at papers and realising that actually we don't know some of the fundamentals that we assume we do know. And we get a lot of really good basic questions about, well, you've looked at something at a particular developmental time point during embryogenesis. What happened before that, and what happened in other species, and what happened, 100 million years ago? So you get a whole lot more questions from an audience such as this who are not embryologists, which really make you start questioning some of the fundamentals in your own area of research. And I think as we are usually surrounded by people who know the same as you, we all ignore those gaps or don't even know that they're there, so we don't even ignore them, we don't even know that we're there. And it's coming to a workshop such as this where you're bringing together cosmologists, cancer researchers, bacteriologists, embryologists such as myself, that the gaps are revealed and the uncertainties are revealed, and I think that's fantastic.